From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Dr. Jonathan Foley is a leading climate scientist and sustainability expert, as well as being the executive director of Project Drawdown. This is the world's leading resource for climate solutions. Well, Dr. Foley will be in Boise on October 2nd as the keynote speaker for the annual Idaho Women's Charitable Foundation Symposium, and he's joining us live right now to talk more about his work. Dr. Foley, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So can you just begin by letting us know what drew you to this type of work?
Well, I'm a scientist who's worked on environmental issues for my whole career, whether it's climate change or the loss of nature and biodiversity around the world, things that we're really concerned about. And, you know, for so long, we tend to focus on the problems of things like climate change, you know, how bad things are getting and how we can document all these problems. But now we need to kind of pick ourselves off the ground and focus on solutions. So that's what I focus my entire work on now, is finding solutions that are practical, affordable, and that actually do a lot of other good things, like create jobs, improve communities, and also help us address climate change. So trying to focus on the can-do and the glass is half full side of the street, if you will, of what we can do about these big, serious problems.
Well, I think that's such a great approach, because it feels like in so many senses that when we start to talk about climate change, it feels so overwhelming. And as you said, I mean, you feel like there's, you know, the bottom just going to keep going, right? And how do we make change? And is that one of the reasons why, you know, Project Drawdown was created, and why this organization is focused on solutions?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. It's kind of funny because, you know, climate change is a very serious problem, and it's one that is already beginning to have big impacts. Absolutely. But also, and this is what we feel is not being talked about enough, we also have great solutions. Not only do we have solutions that can help us stop climate change, these solutions are actually good for us in so many other ways. They create jobs that can't be outsourced or turned into AI bots. They're good for rural communities in particular, but communities across America and across the world. They clean our air. They make us more equitable. They help us improve the landscapes and watersheds around us. There's so many upsides just staring us in the face, but we're not doing enough about it. It's kind of like you only have, let's imagine the world's doctors only told you about how sick you were feeling, but never discussed what the medicines are or what the cures are or what they can do about it. But that's what we've been doing in the environmental community. It's like we're a doctor going into the waiting room saying, oh man, you're really sick, but I'm out of here, bye.
Exactly.
Let's have the other half of the conversation, like, hey, we got a problem, but now here's what we can do about it. And the good news is when we do it, we actually are all going to be better off than we've ever been before.
So let's talk a little bit about the mission at Project Drawdown, because it seems simple, but at the same time, kind of complex, because you want to help the world stop climate change as quickly, safely, and equitably as possible. So can we begin by talking about that equity part of it and how you imagine that to be?
Well, I mean, the bottom line is, you know, Project Drawdown aims to be a resource to the world to help stop climate change, because the world needs some science-based, honest broker who can basically say, hey, that solution you're hearing about to stop climate change, this one works. This one over here, somebody else is trying to sell you, that one doesn't. It's too expensive. Mm-hmm. The technology doesn't work, and so on. So in a lot of ways, we're like the consumer reports for climate change. We're trying to guide people to the things that work well and avoid the things that don't. But along the way, we do have to think about like other things besides the environment and climate. We have to think about people. And that's, so that's where that kind of part of our mission to be make sure solutions are also equitable. That in the spirit of, you know, trying to solve the climate crisis, we don't end up screwing over a whole bunch of other people or causing a lot of other harms. There ought to be kind of a Hippocratic oath of climate action. You know, let's try not to do any harm along the way. But there are inevitable trade-offs that, you know, like any shift in what we do in the world, an economic shift from anything to any, from typewriters to computers, from landlines to cell phones, that created new opportunities and jobs for some people, but it also meant disrupting things we used to do. And that's going to happen with climate change too. But how do we do it in the way that is most equitable and most fair, so that we really help put people first when we think about addressing a long-term environmental issue?
So you mentioned that these solutions can help rural America. And Idaho is a rural state. Yes, we have big populations dispersed around the state, but for the most part, we are a rural state. We have a lot of agriculture. We are definitely impacted by climate change. I am sitting here talking to you right now, and we have some of the worst air quality in the country right now due to fires going on. So when you say these solutions will help places like rural America, can you give us examples of what you mean when you say that?
Well, I live in rural Minnesota, and I'm surrounded by a lot of cornfields, which are producing things like ethanol, part of our energy mix in America, but also surrounded by wind turbines and by solar farms and other things. So a lot of the natural resources of our country are in the rural areas, kind of by definition. That's where our farms are, that's where our pastures are, that's where our mining and other natural resources are. It's also where our transmission lines are and all these kinds of things we do to move food and water and energy around America. That's the rural part of the country, folks, where you and I all live. That's really important. So it turns out that moving to things like renewables, the key areas of the country are going to be more rural areas. And as we see more investment in solar, in wind, transmission, and so on, it's happening more in rural areas, also in areas that tend to skew a little more conservative. For example, a lot of the investments in renewable energy are happening in red counties, not blue counties, and creating lots of great jobs, again, that are high-paying jobs that aren't going anywhere anytime soon and can't be outsourced or turned into a chatbot. So this is actually a pretty good opportunity. And even folks who, sometimes are a little skeptical of environmental actions and so on, welcoming this investment in their community. These are great jobs. These are great opportunities to be energy independent, self-reliant, producing our own energy, our own resources here at home, and avoiding sending money elsewhere in the world, and creating opportunities for us to be more resilient, more prosperous, and also more environmentally sustainable. There really is kind of a win-win-win here if we look at it from the right point of view. And we stop letting ourselves be polarized by the politicians and pundits who want to divide us. Let's just kind of have a common sense kitchen table conversation about, like, hey, wouldn't it be great if Minnesota could power itself from its own natural resources rather than importing? We don't have coal and oil and natural gas in Minnesota. Why do we want to send our money to Texas or Saudi Arabia or wherever when we can grow our energy right here at home and create jobs in the process? And I think that's true in most states, in most parts of the country. And it's really, if we think about it without automatically jumping to Team Red or Team Blue, feeling like some kind of political thing, it's an economic development issue. It's a rural issue. It's a community issue. And it's good for all of us if we do it the right way.
So you've mentioned, creating jobs and that this is, an economic issue, right? So what would these jobs look like, or what do they look like where there have been communities that are putting these strategies into practice?
Well, right now, it's kind of amazing. There are so many jobs happening in the energy sector, mostly in the renewables area, but also in transmission. So the move to create more like solar and wind and storage facilities, new transmission lines, switching to EVs and starting new charging stations, this is creating a number of opportunities for careers and jobs as electricians. The US is not creating enough of new electricians to keep up with demand. If young people are listening and looking for a very high-paying job that isn't going to go anywhere for a long time, that doesn't require you to take out huge student loans to get a degree that might not help you very much. Go become an electrician if that's something you're interested in. You will be guaranteed work almost everywhere in the country. So there's a shortage of electricians in this country. There's a shortage of wind turbine technicians, solar installers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These are great jobs and they can be almost anywhere and they're good, well-paying jobs and they are not going to be going anywhere anytime soon. And they can, of course, be translated to other changes in technology in the future. If you're good with, a good electrician, it's going to be still a good electrician 20 years from now. It's not a dead-end career. So I think those are some of the, very basic opportunities we see that could really help create some new opportunities here. And it's also making us more economically competitive with the world. Solar especially, but also wind and other things. These are the cheapest forms of energy in human history now. Solar is cheaper than natural gas or coal. So why would we want to invest in those old technologies? We need to invest in these new technologies and maintain our economic leadership position in the world. If we don't do it, China definitely is going to do it. And along with Europe and other places, we need to keep up with these changing technologies to keep our cost in line, to kind of keep moving forward with the world at the state of the art of a 21st century economy, not a 19th century economy, and create opportunities along the way. So even if you don't care about climate and the environment, which I think most people really do care, but even if you don't, if you care about jobs, you care about economic competitiveness, you care about national security and securing America's position in the world, you should care about renewable energy and addressing climate change and being at the forefront of climate solutions. That's the leadership position for the US in the 21st century, and we shouldn't lose that position.
So, Dr. Foley, how do you push forward and continue to make change when there still are folks out there, though, right? Who may not think that, I don't want to say they don't believe climate change is real, but they may not want to hold the belief that climate change is at a critical juncture and that we do need to be moving towards these steps that you are laying out.
Well, let's review that statement for a second. A lot of Americans think that we're very divided when it comes to climate change because we're told that we're divided by the politicians, by the pundits. But guess what? We're not. Over 90% of Americans actually strongly believe that climate change is real and they're deeply concerned about it. About 90 to 92% of Americans believe, to some extent or another, climate change is real, and over 60% are concerned or alarmed by what's happening on climate change. Tell me anything else where 90% of Americans agree and 60% are
I
leaning
can't
in.
think of anything. Yeah.
There you go. So guess what? We're pretty much unanimous. Well, not unanimous, but we're pretty convinced this is a serious thing. And then when you tell people, hey, guess what? The solutions to climate change that you believe in and you're mostly concerned about are not going to cost you money in the long run. In fact, they're going to save us money. They're going to create jobs. They're going to make us more prosperous, more secure, and healthier in the long run with better communities. So again, like going to the doctor says, hey, you're sick, but I have a cure that's not only going to cure your illness, it's going to make you healthier, wealthier, and hey, you're going to be better looking than you've ever been, or whatever. Imagine a doctor calling us that. Wouldn't that be awesome? That's what's true with climate change. It's like, hey, the cure to climate change is actually good for us. It doesn't only prevent a problem, it presents an opportunity for us to actually retool our economy and be stronger. So I think when people hear that, the vast majority go, huh, tell me more, especially if it's presented in a kind of a common sense kitchen table kind of language and not politically divided or polarized or whatever. This isn't red or blue or rural urban. It's like American interest moving forward together. But to be fair, yeah, there are some interests out there, especially in the fossil fuel business, who want to keep their profits and their power, and they're going to kind of muddy the waters and try to make it seem like people really don't agree and throw all this kind of mud in the water. But that's just the kind of typical PR stunts of a dying industry. They're going to spread disinformation. They're going to try to convince us that nobody wants these changes, but they're wrong. And they're going to eventually lose to the new kind of economic opportunities in front of us. And we all know that. But I think we just need to realize we're actually a lot more united on this issue than we thought.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us. Just really appreciated the conversation. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me, and I look forward to seeing you all in person in early October.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.